day, and welcome to the Aviva Group Q1 IMS Analyst Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Mark Wilson. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you yet again for joining us for our quarterly call. I have my senior team with me in the room here, including, of course, our new CFO, Tom Stoddart. Now, today, as usual, I'll take you through the main points of the Q1 performance and then open up for Q&A. Now, I do appreciate this is a very busy morning with many of you, and we also, of course, have an Investor Day in about 2 months' time, where you'll get the opportunity, I think, to dig in a lot into our strategy and ask many more questions. So onto the numbers. Overall, I think this, I'll call it a refreshingly boring quarter performance, I think a marked contrast to the weather and the regulatory developments. Value of new business is, of course, up 13% in constant currency. This is now, in fact, our sixth consecutive quarter of year-on-year growth in value of new business. The combined ratio, though, has deteriorated to 97.7% due to the harsh winter in Canada, but more on that a little bit later. OCG was 0.4 billion, and regarding our balance sheet, IFRS NAV per share is up 6% to 286p. MCEV is up 1% to 469p, and the economic capital surplus is 7.8 billion pounds. Now, our improved cash position at the group center has allowed us, as you know, to repay 240 million of, quite frankly, very expensive hybrid debt, and this is, of course, entirely consistent with our deleveraging plan. So now on to a bit more detail. There has been tangible progress in our turnaround businesses, where we are gaining up lost ground. Italy, Spain, and Ireland doubled their VNB to £26 million. In particular, progress in simplifying our Italian business is well ahead of plan, and the extended distribution agreements with UniCredit and UBI following our restructuring should improve margins there going forward further. In our cash generators, I think it's more of a mixed story, frankly. Our UK VNB was down 22%, with annuity VNB driving this decline. Now, on this subject, annuity volumes are down 21% in the quarter. So just to be clear, the volumes are down 21% in the quarter, and the VNB is down 43%. I wouldn't want you to get the impression this was all from the budget at all. We were tracking with lower annuity volumes before the budget announcement on March 19, as margins had tightened in that sector, and we had deliberately reduced our capacity. Looking at the performance in Q1, though, and the impact of the budget changes going forward, it looks like annuity VNB, we think, will end up about £100 million lower in 2014. This is consistent with our previous indications, and knowing what we're doing and what we have on at the moment, I think that would be a good sort of figure to build into your models. With our excess capacity, we will target mid-size bulk purchase annuities, and this should offset some of the budget-driven VNB decline. Just to be clear, we are not targeting jumbo BPAs, as we don't believe we can get the required margin at the jumbo end. But obviously we've been in BPAs for quite some time, and we are clearly an expert in this field. Other parts of the UK life business have shown improvement, with protection VNB up 32%. We've also had encouraging investment sales, which probably surprises a few. I mean, actually, the volumes of investment sales are up 59%, in part due to the platform inflows. We've got a very good platform, particularly in the broker market, and we've got a lot more we're doing taking that to consumers. Now, it's encouraging progress both on the investment side and protection, but I'm still far from satisfied with our position. Although it's encouraging, I'm far from satisfied. Of course, the other parts of the budget changes that are significant is that it will create significant opportunity, and opportunities will arise, in particular in asset management, and you'll hear much more from that later from Ewan at the Analyst Day when we have that. Our other cash generators, France, continued its creditable performance as its VNB grew 34%. While volumes are up, much of this improvement has come through a greater mix of higher margin unit linked savings and protection. This is partly volume, but also product mix, and again is, I think, some pretty good execution of that strategy. The contributions from our growth markets are also a highlight. Our growth market VNB collectively increased 73% and made up 26% of the group VNB. That's up from 19% in the Q1 2013. Poland grew 108%, Asia grew 96%, both of which I think are quite adequate. On the other hand, Turkey VNB declined 21%, which is less acceptable. Overall, regarding the growth markets, we are seeing the shape and dynamics of the group changing for the better, and I think we are getting in a much more balanced and simpler proposition. On to general insurance. In general insurance, the combined ratio deteriorated to 97.7% due to the particularly harsh Canadian winter, popularly and euphemistically known as the polar vortex, which produced some exceptional weather losses of around $40 million. Now, regarding the UK weather, we have previously announced flood losses of £60 million in January and February this year. In fact, the total weather losses for the quarter remained at below £60 million, and this was after a very benign March. And I should point out, though, these figures are broadly in line with long-term average, but also worth noting they are worse than the first quarter last year that was very benign. We've had a fair bit of feedback already this morning that UK weather figures are better than expected, and that may be the case versus peers, but it's very much in line with what we've said before. Premiums in UK GI, though, were down 8%, as we demonstrated, I think, some pretty good discipline in the face of soft market conditions, particularly in personal motor, that remains very, very soft. However, I think there's still an optimal balance between volume and efficiency so that you get the right volume for the fixed costs, etc., and achieving this balance is critical. And frankly, in some business lines, and I'm not including personal motor in that definition, but in some business lines, I think we've probably pushed some of our rating actions in some of our UK sales a little bit too far, and Morris is just looking at the balance of some of that now. Outside of the UK, in general insurance, premiums grew 5% in Canada and Europe in local currency. I guess I should point out, in fact, the UK as well on the life side, actually the volumes actually grew by about 5%. So, but to be clear, we don't chase volume. What we're chasing is VNB, which is where the value is added. On to expenses. Our expenses, despite being ahead of plan at the full year 2013 stage, I want to make it very clear that we're not showing any complacency. If you speak to any of our business units, you will not see any complacency on expenses. And the progress on expenses has continued into 2014. I'm not going to give figures and just the quarterly figures. We'll give expense figures and expense ratios at the full year and at the interims. But just to give you some comfort, the expenses have continued. Restructuring expenses, which we have shown here, are 67% lower at £18 million, which is nearly all related to Solvency II spend. So the restructuring, the large restructuring expenses that we've seen year after year after year in the first quarter were very small. But I should point out, though, again, for a bit of balance, due to the nature of project spend, I would not be surprised and project spend restructurings and stuff, I wouldn't be surprised to see a modest pickup in some of the quarters throughout the year. We will update you, as I said, on our expense ratio at half year, and we may refine our calculations for this ratio as we go forward. I know we gave you some draft proposals at the full year, and I know some of you have made some suggestions for its improvement, and Tom definitely has his own views on this subject as well. To the balance sheet, IFRS book value is up 6% to 286 pence per share. Improvements were as a result of profit in the quarter and positive movements in our pension fund, partially offset by negative Forex impact. Now, whilst the market may view this book value growth positively, as it was an issue we had last year, part of this increase is due to the vagaries of IFRS pension accounting, which I have certainly discussed with you before. But following a period of dislocation between the operating earnings and book value growth, we are very keen to see that book value grows with earnings and is not eroded as it historically has been by restructuring costs or investment variances and other below-the-line items. Now, as part of this, to make it more predictable, we have somewhat de-risked the pension scheme, which is one of the benefits you've seen flowing through in this quarter. Our economic capital surplus of $7.8 billion is quite adequate, and the group's central liquidity of $1.5 billion is pretty strong, is boosted by disposal proceeds. We've continued to restructure the business with disposals of the boutique asset manager in the US, that's River Road in the US, South Korea and Turkey GI have also been announced, as well as quite a major restructuring of our Italian business. So I think that's a summary, but in summary, despite some, I guess, literal and metaphorical headwinds, the Q1 results, I think, are a testament to the benefits of focused diversification. Diversification in some core markets with multi-line being general insurance, life insurance, and asset management. And this means that the group's, despite the headwind, the group results are quite satisfactory indeed. However, despite some of the areas of outperformance, there are frankly still many areas of disappointment or underperformance which we are addressing. As I keep on stressing internally to my team, Aviva remains a turnaround story and there is much to do. And on that note, operator, I think we can open that up for some questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to allow everyone to signal. And we will now take our first question from Blair Stewart from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good morning. I've got a couple of questions, and you touched on some of these points in the commentary, Mark. But just firstly, on operational cash, how do you feel about the outlook for that, given any kind of seasonality aspects, and in relation to the $0.4 billion you've put out in Q1? Secondly, just maybe further on your responses to the UK annuity changes or the UK market changes, you mentioned SME bulks as one response. I wonder if there's anything else in the hopper to the extent you want to talk about that at this stage. And maybe also your view on the guidance debate and how you expect that to pan out. And maybe if possible, just some further comments around the product mix changes that you're pushing through in Europe, which seem to be having an effect. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. It's quite a list, and I'll go through some of those and also get some of my colleagues to comment. The OCG, as you know, the key issue is cash. OCG isn't cash, but it's certainly one of the stages to get there. The real measure is what we get in, which frankly can be a bit lumpy throughout the year. I'm not going to give you the figures yet, but to say that we have obviously now getting cash in from the UK life business, but we're not going to put those figures up. We'll give you that at half year. OCG is a good guy, but the real measure is cash. I know, in fact, Tom's come in and looked at OCG and thinks we can make it clearer and much more transparent with how we go forward. Tom, do you want to pass your comment on that?
Sure. Well, again, I'm relatively new here, having just joined a couple of weeks ago and about a month after the quarter end, but I'm looking at a lot of things and looking at a lot of different things going forward. Blair, I think as you look at OCG, you know, on a quarterly basis, you know, it's hard to read that across. It has been affected by weather here. But, you know, I think as we all know, OCG is an imperfect guide to cash flow. So we'll be looking at trying to improve measures here and be able to give you a better sense as to how we see cash flow. But I think here the correlation between the quarterly OCG and what we're going to end up with for the year on cash flow is not that strong.
Yeah, that helps. Secondly, your question, if I can actually take the product question last, and all of our, something we didn't do that well on product, there's a few things. We have never really packaged product before, which we're doing now, and we've never managed product mix as actively as we are. And that, we do that partly by taking capital away from various cells and putting it to other cells, and that's very deliberate. We do that tactically quarter by quarter, and we do it yearly. So some of the drop in annuities was just a tactical pull away because we didn't think we could get the returns and we didn't want to use that much capital in that. And France is a good example of what they've done, moving to higher margin products. And in the UK, moving to protection products, for example, helps with capital usage, it helps with value in new business, it helps with cash flow. So it all the stuff's coming together and it's very deliberate. And frankly, I think we've only started that. Although I said some nice things in my opening remarks about what we've done in protection, frankly, I'm still think our protection sales are entirely unsatisfactory. And the team's working hard on that, and hopefully over each quarter you'll see those increase. On annuities, just to be clear, I don't disagree with annuity changes. We were surprised like everyone else, but all it did was speed up some of the other stuff we were doing. Just to be clear, the annuity volumes were down 21% in the first quarter, but I wouldn't want to put that all down to the budget because it simply wasn't. I mean, the budget only came out on March 19, didn't it? We have got a lot of products that we've been, products such as drawdown products, which are quite interesting. We have our platform, which is a growing very, very fast, which accounts for the growth and the investment products you've seen. 59% growth is going in the right direction. And the other part of it, of course, is on Ewan's product range. Now, I'll hand over to Ewan to talk a bit about that, and David might want to add some comments. I don't want Ewan to pre-announce a strategy that you're going to see in the analyst day, but you want to add some colour on the products and your multi-asset products and things like that as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's very helpful for me to be able to piggyback on the back of the drawdown platform that David's already built. And we already have a lot of interesting Aviva investor propositions there, volatility controlled funds called our Mission Range. And in actual fact, we've got some high quality income propositions, equity income, distribution funds, fixed income funds that can sit on that platform. But Mark's quite right. I'm working busily on a range of outcome-orientated funds that will go very directly for the outcomes that are important to clients, which are clearly generating good levels of income with low levels of volatility and good levels of return with low levels of volatility. So that's all in hand. But as we stand at the moment, I genuinely believe we've got a platform and a fund range that's as good as anyone else in the industry.
Yeah, and it is a focus. And I see you, and you also made an announcement yesterday of a senior hire that you've made to assist in that process. David, did you have a comment?
Yeah, Blair, just a few thoughts on the European product mix. Firstly, in France, our focus has been largely on unit-linked. We've shifted the unit-linked mix of savings from 18% in 2013, first quarter, 25% this quarter. Italy, we've led the market in reducing guarantees on with-profit And in Spain, we've dialed back significantly on financial annuities that were value destroying. But I'd also echo Mark's point. I think there's still a hell of a lot of upside for us on protection across all of the European markets.
So now the last point was your point on the advice, Blair. It's going to be interesting to see how this develops. The FCA is working on it. I've had discussions with them. I would hope we get to a place where advice can be online, it can be over the phone, it doesn't have to be face-to-face. That would be our contention, because I think it's just impractical for anyone and way too expensive for the consumer as well to be just to do this face-to-face. And we're working with them, and from what I can see, I think the FCA will do the right thing and be pretty pragmatic. So hopefully that answers all your questions.
Would you expect that to be provided, or is your position that that could be provided by the insurance companies themselves, Mark, on that last point?
Well, it is, and I've had the discussion with them. I think they certainly recognise that we are part of this process, definitely. Now, we have, obviously, the biggest network of brokers, and we're also in the UK, we're tied up with most of the key banks, and one of the reasons that you are seeing the protection sales increase. I'll back up a step. One of the reasons last year protection sales were low is because after RDR, the banks just got scared of providing any advice on anything. And frankly, we and the regulator have had to coax them back into the market on protection. You're seeing the early stages of that happening now. So some of them put people back in the road just in the last quarter, so you're seeing that come up. And we're the one with contracts with all the large ones. And so it will take us some time, but that's what you're starting to see. You're starting to see the protection sales pick up because the banks have been coaxed back in the market, and rightly so.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Very good.
Thanks.
And we will now take our next question from Ashik Musaddi from JP Morgan. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, and good morning, everyone. A couple of questions. First of all, on your protection, I mean, you seem to said that you are not very satisfactory with your protection sales. Now, how should we think about it? You grew by around 20-30% in protection in this quarter, and one of your competitor is saying that the growth expected from protection is roughly 5%. So how should we think about where do you want to land up to in terms of protection, and what does that mean for cash and cash in the short term? So that's the first thing. Second thing would be on economic capital surplus. Now, you are among the very few in UK to disclose economic capital surplus. How confident are you on this economic capital surplus number, given that Solvency II is coming down the road? And thirdly, if possible, can we get the split of the book value movement? Thank you.
So the first one, just on protection. Yeah, I'm aware of the other comments in the market. We're playing in a slightly different dynamic because, frankly, I think we've massively underperformed for our client base and our distribution over recent years in protection. And so this was a deliberate strategy to get back into it last year. And our key, there's a couple of key things. Cross-sell on the base, particularly on direct, is starting to show some, I'll call them encouraging or surprising results, early days, but we'll see. And the banks are starting to get back in. So I would have thought our growth rate in protection should far outstrip the market because currently at the moment we don't have our natural market share. And I think that's unacceptable. And it's a product range that David and I and the group like. And so this is an area that we're doing. We're bringing in some extra talent from outside. We've only just started, so the results you've seen have been the start of what we've seen. Now, could it go up or down in each quarter? Of course it could. So I'm not making any predictions. I'm just saying that I'm really disappointed with it. But I'm disappointed with it strategically because we've got a lot of work to do. But that is where you can see an upside, particularly in the UK, but not just the UK. Now, the second thing on economic capital. So we disclose, and as you know, we're one of the few on economic capital. Now, economic capital versus others in the market, we're the closest thing, I guess, to Solvency II. It isn't the same. I said last year that I thought the outcome of the Solvency II work was satisfactory. just to be clear, there's still some risks on the horizon. Anyone that says that they know all about Solvency II then doesn't know anything about Solvency II, because you've got the Tier 2 text that we still haven't been given. We think it's going in the right direction. We think we're well positioned versus peers for it. Could it have, frankly, on the current text, it will have ups in some countries and down in others, and that's fine. And the other key thing that we all need to do, and we need to do like everyone else, is we need to get our internal models approved by the regulator. Now, we've got some time on that, and we're working hard on that, and as you saw, it's cost us a fair bit of money in the first quarter, as we signalled it would. But that's progressing, I think, quite adequately, but there's a lot of work to do. So there's no doubt that us being an economic capital and we disclose our stuff to the market, I think is particularly helpful. It's not exactly the same, but there's a lot of similarities in it. Is there any, Tom or John, want to add any comment to that?
I just comment that, you know, the way we run the company is based on an economic capital basis. That's the way we think about managing businesses and allocating capital and ultimately the cash flows that we produce for shareholders. So that culture is very comfortable here. And again, as Mark says, there will be differences as we migrate to Solvency II, and we've got a project team that's very active working on that.
Well, I wouldn't lose sleep over. I can put it that way. That's my job. The other thing was split of book value. We don't provide profit numbers but on a quarterly basis, and obviously that would if we split it. So no, we won't split it on a quarter.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you.
And we will now take our next question from Andrew Crean from Autonomous. Please go ahead, sir.
Morning, all. Andrew Crean is Autonomous. Three questions.
Autonomous.
Three questions, if I might. Firstly, in simple terms, could you explain what the restructuring in Italy is about? I noticed last year that you had operating cash generation of 88 million and only 12 million came up to group. So whether you could explain what the potential is there. Secondly, could you say whether there was any growth in your new business profits if you looked at the 2013 new business profits on the economic assumptions which the 2014 were based on? And thirdly, I wonder whether you could... I see in your statement you say that there's quite a lot of disposals come through and you're looking at the business now as being much simpler. Should we take it that the current portfolio of businesses is largely the ones you're going to be running with and there won't be much further in terms of disposals?
Well, thanks and good morning, Andrew. Okay, so three questions. First, restructuring in Italy. This is something that we signaled a bit throughout the year. Italy was, I guess, typically Italian. It was our most complex business. It was holding companies that then had JVs with one party that had JVs under that with other parties. And it also had some cross-holdings in the banks, non-traded, non-listed cross-holdings, which we didn't think fitted our risk profile, frankly. And so the restructuring was done for a number of reasons. It was done so we could control those businesses, because at the JVs a couple of levels down, we couldn't control what products were in there. And because of that, they were making negative VNB. Now, because we've sold them, you're not going to see that, I guess, in the positive year-on-year on VNB, because you take it out of both. But in actual fact, it adds positively to the group. So it's going to add to the growth rates, although you won't see it in the growth rates, if that makes sense. So we did it so that we could get rid of the cross-holdings, that we could maintain, in fact, expand distribution, and we could control our product mix, and then it allows the cash flows to come up to the group. Because some of the two levels down, they had too much cash, so the cash was trapped, and we couldn't get it out. We aren't going to give you any guidance about what that means for the quarter, but I can tell you it's helpful. David, who did all that hard work, am I right?
Morning, Andrew. Perfect summary, Mark. I think the only thing I would add is, as well as unblocking and enabling the cash, the other thing that we're doing here is trying to improve the product margin and stabilise the distribution. So we've extended our distribution with UBI by another 5 years, and we are refocusing our UniCredit distribution much more on protection. And the expectation is that that will enable us to significantly improve the margins and drive the VNB as well as cash.
So, I mean, Italy is it's still in the turnaround camp, just to be clear. I don't want to let them off the hook that easy, but to be fair, their progress has been faster than we had anticipated. Your second one, growth in VNB. Now, look, the main growth in VNB is product mix and volume. I mean, there's no fundamental changes in assumptions. There might be little things around the edges, up and down, I might add, but there's no fundamental changes. It's, you know, we're not, there's no games being played in VNB. It's simply some basic product mix and volume.
Mark, on that, I was just saying, I mean, if you look at the quarterly VNB last year, it goes 209, 217, 193, and then 285 in the fourth quarter, presumably when the economic assumption changes reflected higher interest rates. And so I suppose if that was spread over the quarters, I just wondered whether the 224 this year, first quarter, actually would have been higher than first quarter last year on the same economic assumptions.
That's just seasonality. I mean, the business still quarter by quarter is quite seasonal, as you know, which is why we do the comparison quarter by quarter. There was no fundamental changes in that. It was basic. It's the, by far the biggest impact was mix. Was mix and margin. By far the biggest impact. There might have been some stuff around the edges that wasn't maybe. We check all those. We control all those things at Group Centre, just to be clear. So that's the way we've been running it. But the thing that has changed, so it, France, as David said before, is quite an easy one to look at. So France, the mix to unit link just went up dramatically as a deliberate change. Then because of that, the sales also increased, and because of that, the margin increased. So you're seeing those sort of impacts more than anything else. In Asia, you're seeing quite big product mix changes as well. We fundamentally changed the product in China, which has grown, you know, I think I'm right saying about 100-odd% or something, just because we changed the product mix, which fundamental changes in product mix, which impacted our margins. And Aviva's never done this stuff before, and we've got a number of years where we need to optimise this yet, and I wouldn't want you to think we're close, but you know, we have had 6 quarters of growth, I guess, but we've got a long way to go. Now, the last one was your point on the simpler portfolio. So obviously we are a lot simpler, and we're getting that feedback from everyone, which is good. Again, Tom has some views on that where we're still not, which makes sense. Have we got any others to sell? We have got a few still modest ones to sell. We've got still, as I've said before, we have still some more restructuring in Spain. You know, we're in another arbitration with one of the banks. I've said that before. So that's more restructuring there. We've still got a few small bits and pieces that we need to get rid of. That will still give us some cash, but I mean, they're pretty modest. They're very modest in terms of earnings, or they're negative in terms of earnings, just as an aside. So it won't have any impact on earnings, but we've got still some that will free up some capital I'd rather allocate to other places. Our objective here is to be diversified, but be very focused. We want a small number of larger businesses that can dominate a market, and that can have pricing power in those markets, and that we can have scale, or we can get scale. So Indonesia was an example where we believe we can get scale quickly. And so central to our discussions at the moment, and we're having a lot of these discussions right now, is where we allocate capital and where we take it away, and that's the way we're doing business. So we're getting close. We're not there yet, Andrew. We've still got a few more, and frankly, I've still got to complete... Well, Jason and his team have got to complete the ones we've announced and get the money in cash in our balance sheet.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
And we will now take our next question from Gordon Atkin from RBC. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Thanks. Three questions, please. First, on annuities and bulks. The chairman said, I mean, it's probably about 18 months or so ago now, that you couldn't make the profits and bulks work. Now, post the budget, we're seeing consultants talking about more competition. That's what they're expecting. And also we've got some evidence of some of the providers reducing rates post the budget. So we're just wondering how you square those two. The second one on pensions, one of the other pre-RDR commission payers reported this morning and announced a $20 to $25 million hit due to the new pensions pricing cap. I'm just wondering, would you be of a similar order to that? And the third thing on pensions in the UK, again, you've got flat volumes. Just wondering what net inflows into that business were. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. So three questions. So the first one on bulks. What the chairman actually said was the large BPAs, and I also clarified that I think it was mid-year last year. So what we said was we were out of the jumbos. In fact, last year we wrote about 60 BPAs and at about a value of $400 million, just to be clear. That will increase this year. Now, we're not going to be in the jumbo wing because we don't believe we can make the margin. And I know some people in the market are saying that the margins aren't going to decrease on bulks. In actual fact, I disagree with that. I think with competition, the margins on BPAs, although they'll still be a key part of the market, I think the margins will decrease, which is why we only want to play in the mid-end. And we've traditionally been one of the strongest players in bulks. The reason why we'll do more is with less of the personal annuities, we have more capacity. We've got more capacity to back it with the assets that we back it with. You know, we've got commercial mortgages and equity release and stuff like that, so we have more capacity to back it. So that's why we'll do it, but we're very cognizant of the margins. So I think the margins will decrease. I think that's inevitable. And we will only play in that market as much as we can get the margins. We're not going to chase it because we don't need to. I mean, that's why we're a diversified business. Pensions cap impact, and I saw the release you're talking about. It's for us, a lot of our stuff is below that pension cap anyway, and certainly all the new stuff for some time has been. So I can tell you it's got an immaterial impact on our earnings. We have got another lever we can pull on that as well, and this is one of the reasons it's immaterial, because, of course, we can pull trail commissions. We have a very large level of expenses on trail commissions, and one of the levers we can pull is to get rid of trail commissions. So the impact for us is, I'll say, modest.
Mark, it's time. If I can just add, we have taken a hit in our MCEV, so it...
Yes, $160 to $200 million.
On the VIF, right?
Yeah. So to just be clear, that is built in. The 160 to 200 million is built in. I think it's 200 million. It's built into the VIV. Gordon, what was your third question?
The third question is just about, Amy, you've reported flat volumes in pensions in the UK. Just wondering what the flows were in that business, net inflows. So just the gross versus the outflow.
We don't actually disclose flows at now. I can tell you that for the group, non-investment funds flow will be is a critical measure inside the group. At the half year, we're going to disclose it to you for the first time in the detail, and that is a critical measure. It's also one of Ewan's critical measures in his business, so it's something we're very focused on. And we will provide some good detail for you on that. That is a metric you will find us being very focused on.
Okay, thank you very much.
And we will now take our next question from Abid Hussain from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning all. I have three questions as well. The first one is on Turkey. Can you just talk about the challenges in Turkey and the outlook for that market? The second one, a slightly technical question. Can you just talk about what was your thinking in applying a liquidity premium to your participating products? Was that driven by peers or do you have more clarity on where Solvency II is heading with that? And then finally, a question on capital. What's your capacity to redeploy freed up capital towards for an attractive ROE into either Europe or Asia? Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. three questions. So Turkey, one of the joys of emerging markets is you will get quarter by quarter volatility. Now I think results in Turkey are actually quite unacceptable. I don't like a growth market being down. It's, as you know, because of you had some political issues there which impacted credit, when impacted credit you don't get the same life insurance impact. So the whole market seen in that quarter quite a big drop, and we weren't immune to that. I can guarantee with absolute certainty in emerging markets you'll get more of that in some quarter. So I'm not overly concerned about it. You know, you might get a flood or you might get some political tension in some emerging markets, so it happens. It doesn't change our position in the market that I see Turkey as an attractive market with very attractive margins. We have a fabulous JV partner and we have a very strong leadership position. David, internet?
Yeah, I think the other thing is our position is quite diversified in Turkey. We've got a strong bank partnership with Akbank. We've got the biggest direct sales force in the market, and we're also starting to tap some of the other Sabancı assets, some of their retail ventures with the likes of Carrefour. So I think to echo Mark, I think 2014 first half really, really quite choppy on the back of credit, but certainly the medium to long term outlook for that market is very attractive.
Yeah, I mean, at some stage in the future, won't be this year, sometime in the future, I'd like to get the analyst down to have a look. I think it's a market that has all the characteristics of Asia 15 years ago, and I can prove that with numbers, so I'm a big fan. Now, your second question, sorry, I don't know this, I don't know technical questions, I'm going to hand over to John.
So the liquidity premium, we've changed that to bring that in line with our European peers, and of course, as we move into Solvency II, the volatility adjustment on our funds is... So just bringing it all in line. It hasn't had a positive impact on our numbers.
Now, the last one's on capital and redeploying capital. As I mentioned at the full year, this is something that we're getting much more active in. We've made a lot of improvements. We are making decisions. We saw that in annuities in the first quarter. You saw it in personal motor in the UK. We're making decisions both tactically quarter by quarter, and then more generically through M&A and exits in countries. What's our capacity to redeploy capital? Well, of course, that I see that as part of mine and frankly Tom's key jobs is deploying capital around the group. Just to be clear, we're not doing that at the expense of cash flow to the group or dividends, just to be very clear on that. Investment thesis is cash flow and growth. We're going to put the money in the markets where we can get the highest ROEs. And look, day by day, I mean, I had some discussion with one of the business sales heads yesterday. Day by day, we're having some fairly ruthless, isn't the right word, some rigorous debates on the allocation of capital. And some of the sales that are falling below what we believe is reasonable, we're saying, well, we want you to give us capital back. And we'll reward them for that. And you can give it back in dividends, or you can give it back by selling pieces of the business, or you can give it back by just stopping selling new business, and we take some of the surplus. So this is very active as part of our management meetings at the moment. Ethan Leto?
Not a lot to add to that. I mean, you know, obviously we've got our business leaders making decisions about how they're deploying the capital within their business around different products. So at that level, that kind of capital allocation is happening all the time. And then at a much higher level, there are tactical decisions, as Mark has indicated. I would say, you know, we are growing in Asia. We have the new joint venture in Indonesia. So we are redeploying capital around the group already. And again, coming in new, one of my tasks here is to improve the financial flexibility of the group, so that we have much more opportunity to do that, and that's one of my key areas of focus.
Great, thanks. That's very clear.
And we will now take our next question from Oliver Steele from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I've got two main questions. One is about the change in preparation on the embedded value, which has added about $500 million to your embedded value. Can you break down the effect of the three things you've done, which is effectively adding retail fund management in the UK, adding health, and also the changes to the liquidity premiums? And also, could you tell us to what extent that has actually helped your economic surplus? Because, I mean, logically, if you've added 500 million to the EV, that is also coming through into the economic surplus. That's a sort of rather long question one. Question two is on the UK non-life side. You sort of said in your statement that there was a sort of balance between cutting or lifting prices and volume, or at least I think that's the impression, but given that it is a competitive market, how do you see that panning out going forward?
Okay, thanks, Oliver. So just to be clear, the changes that we did was just to bring us in line with peers, so we're entirely consistent. And on the growth rate comparisons, we put them in both, just to be absolutely clear. So the growth rate comparisons, we put them in last year's and this year. So it's not a case of putting them this year's to show growth. So we just put them both. So it's a very fair comparison. I don't think we've broken it down any further. John, do you want to?
We haven't broken it out for the market, but it's a couple of hundred million on the extension of the scope to include the collectives business and 300
yeah.
million on the... On
so
the
it, it helps with EV. It didn't help with BNB. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get the comparatives, and the comparatives look good, but certainly versus my forecasts, whichever way we looked at it. I was actually more concerned about the economic capital effect. Has that added 500 million to the economic capital surplus?
No, it hasn't rolled through into the economic capital numbers at all.
Okay, and will it ever, or was that in there already?
It wasn't in there, and we'll see where Solvency II goes. But it's not in our ICA numbers or our economic capital numbers.
I think the answer is it could, but we need to see what Solvency do with the final text is to see whether it does or not.
Okay, thanks.
That's one of the unknowns. Now, second question, Morris, do you want to take that?
Yeah, happy to do so. Thanks, Mark. And morning, Oliver. I mean, as you know, our UK general insurance business is just over £4 billion, and we have a diversified book. We look at it on a cell basis, so certainly we have the motor cell, which has been incredibly competitive. Prices in the first quarter are down about 7%. And over the last 12 months, depending on which source you use, they're down sort of 15 to 20. You know, our overall reduction in net written premiums down 8 is in line with our major peers. I think if you look at our other cells, whether that be our home cell, you know, our small medium enterprise or our corporate risk, some of those cells are actually, in fact, growing. So we do look at, you know, volume and profit trade-offs. You know, when the market falls as it has so steeply in the motor market, you know, we get to a point where there's not positive economic margin to be made, and we're certainly not going to chase volume. I mean, I think if you look in the medium term, certainly growing this business is key. We've got a number of strategies, and I think we'll discuss those at the upcoming analyst day.
It's going to be a long day by the sound of it.
Thank you very much.
And we will now take our next question from Fahid Changazi from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just a question on annuities and your guidance of a 100 million drop in UK in VNB. Could you just give us your underlying assumptions again on the GAOs, etc., and also in terms of the business you retain on individual annuities, are you assuming constant margin from this point onwards? And I suppose just another question for simple algebra's sake. In absolute terms, Q1 UK VNB is down 25 million in Q1 2013, and we haven't had the impact of the budget yet, so you know, times 4 years to 100 million. So I'm just thinking, all the other comments you made about protection sales and so on, will they be compensating enough? So that's why you get comfortable giving the guidance of a 100 million drop. Thank you.
Okay, and thanks. So, yeah, I guess, I mean, that's a good question. The 100 million, while we're comfortable with 100 million, and we're not going to break it down because it's, you know, we're giving indications of what is rather than guidance. We're saying that's our best estimate, and I think that's the estimate building the models. There's a few reasons for that. BPAs haven't come through, and, you know, we've got a pretty good idea what's in the pipeline. So BPAs haven't come through in those first numbers. So the budget impact, to be clear, the budget impact is only down 21% in terms of volume in that since the budget, but it varies between 20 and 30 odd. So our decline in volumes, it appears to be a bit less than market, but I want to be clear, it's way too early to tell, and so it's a bit hard to make too many assumptions. I don't know why we're down a bit less than the market. Maybe it's because when there's less people going for it, they maybe tend to go for the big brands or something. I mean, that's the only reason I can possibly think of. We don't think the margin on the individual annuities, and I'll look over to David here who may want to comment on that, but we don't think the margin on the individual annuities is going to change much. I do think the margin on BPAs will come down. But I just make the point, the $100 million is because of all the mitigating actions that we know we can take in it. So we're just trying to give you an open indication of where we think it will end up. And you know, so far we've been proved to be pretty right. David, do you want to pass some
discussion? Yeah, I think it's really difficult to tell what's going to happen to margins in the individual market at the moment. It's too early to tell. I mean, on BPA, that's a market that's growing strongly. We're pretty confident, and as Mark said, we're building a strong pipeline. I mean, one of the things I think is interesting is we're pretty sure that annuities or some form of guaranteed income products are going to remain a very popular choice for customers because they remove a lot of uncertainty for them. How that level actually plays out, we need to wait and see. We're pretty well placed whichever way it goes though, because we've got a range of guaranteed income products there now, and we've also launched our flexible drawdown product, which means if people want to remain invested, then you know we can satisfy that through the platform, which is going really well. So we'll wait and see. I mean, I guess if more people come into the bulk purchase market, maybe there'll be some pressure there. But as I say, it's a growing market, and we think we can make good profit in the small to medium sized cases where we've got a very strong franchise.
And just to be clear, our results in the first quarter. It's very easy to blame a budget, which is a nice soundbite for the media, isn't it? But frankly, we don't think that's the case. Ours was a deliberate choice on capacity. So we didn't want the capital or to back it with the investments that we needed for those sort of margins, because the margins had come down. Now, are they going to get worse? I don't think the margins will get much worse on the individual stuff, but that was a deliberate choice. Now, as we have more capacity, we can fill some of that with BPAs, which I think is really what we're trying to say here. And as to what happens to the budget, well, you'll be able to guess as well as us. We seem to be doing okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes.
And we will now take our next question from William Elderkin from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Just two follow-ups, really. First of all, just can you give us a sense of how we can translate that guidance in terms of UK VNB development, the 100 million, into the impact on IFRS earnings and OCG, or at least what we should be thinking about? And then second, just on UK motor, I just wondered if you had a view as to the likely direction of industry pricing over the next 6 to 12 months.
Okay. I mean, we gave the full year results. After the budget, we gave a bit of indication on that. It's not major for us, partly because this part, it's very small single digits, is what we'll tell you. So I wouldn't read too much into it. It's not a major factor for us. It's small single digits, so they're small. I'm talking percent wise. So that's first on the motor pricing.
Yeah. The only thing I could really add, William, I mean, listen, the prices continue to come down. They're down 7.25, down 15-20, depending on the source over the last year. I mean, if you look at the industry results as a whole, you'd certainly expect at some point, that to bottom out and to increase. But at this point, I certainly don't want to signal when that may be, but I'd certainly expect at some point that has to be the trend. But there are some other potential developments. You know, the Competition Commission, is continuing to look at the motor products. I mean, certainly Aviva supports that effort. We still think there's lots of costs in the system. We would support things like a wider ban on referral fees, particularly areas like credit hire. There's discussions around the small claims track. So, those would be largely neutral to slightly positive, because obviously that would have the offset in terms of the claims cost. So that's the only sort of slight red herring. Without further reform, I think at some point we need to expect motor results to move up, because the overall industry results on that line are not positive.
I mean, in fact, we have a company view, and Miles is driving this, but we have a company view that you should go to a no-fault system here. I think the motor in the UK, I think the motor insurance system is flawed fundamentally, and because of that, you get so many claims farmers and other intermediaries in that mix, and I think it's poor for UK consumers, and I think it would be good for the industry to go to a no-fault system, and therefore it will get the industry into far more balance. But we will be active in pursuing that, and we'll see how good our lobbying is, Morris.
Good, thank you.
Thanks, next one.
And we will now take our next question from Andy Hughes from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, I've got three questions if I could. The first one is on non-life insurance again, I'm afraid. As someone who previously commented on, who's surprised how resilient the top line was in UK GI, I probably should ask you for a bit more information when it falls quite a bit. On the UK motor stuff that you seem to be signalling as a key driver of this, I thought that was only less than 19% of the UK GI business. And I think you were pointing out that you've grown the household business, which is actually almost twice as big as the motor book. So maybe you could give us some granularity about which segments are growing and which segments are shrinking, in particular the change from Q4 to Q1, and the comment about returns going forward. Are you kind of prepared to tolerate a lower return than perhaps your hurdle rates were before because the market won't accept that to maintain expense ratios going forward? Second question is on Europe and the life business. Obviously, one of the things that the results highlight is the fact that controlling your own distribution from the life side is very important to the group because it means you can sell more unit-linked business. But what does this mean for the strategy? Does this mean that you want to expand the tied agents business across Europe and perhaps not expand some of the other existing bank insurance distribution arrangements you've got? And the third question is on investment business in the UK, particularly the platform business. Obviously, 59% growth in UK and Ireland investment sales. How much is sort of platform related, and how much money are you making on the wrap platform? Because it looks to be very low charge business. Thank you.
Okay, Andy, thanks. So the first question on the non-life, I'll hand over to Mark.
Yeah, good morning, Andy, and thanks for the question. We'll probably end up disclosing an awful lot more detail on that at the upcoming analyst session, but let me give you a little bit of color. You're right in saying that the motor business is broadly about 20% of our 20% of our book. It's certainly been driven down pretty significantly in terms of the rates. For us, that particular line is down well into the mid-teens. You know, we've decided not to chase volume there. Certainly at some of the levels and some of the sub-segments, it's actually dilutive, and we're not making a positive economic margin. We're actually holding our own in the home area. Home rates are down very, very low, single digits. Probably you're seeing a bit of a shift of capital at home, because one would have expected with all the storms since October that there would have probably been some inflationary pressure in home. But given the alternative of motor at home, you know, we've seen that come down a little bit. I think the one sale we have given guidance on previously that has been dilutive in terms of margin and certainly has a significant effort is the commercial motor. Commercial motor continues to be a focus. We have tactically by design exited many underperforming subsegments such as taxis in certain fleets. And an area, just to give you a little bit of color, that is growing and growing quite positively for us continues to be our large commercial. So I think at the upcoming analyst day, I'd be happy to give an awful lot more detail on those breakdowns and marginal.
Okay, and the second question talked about the life side. I don't think it actually just relates to Europe. I'd say it's a global, I'll give you a global answer. Our strategy is very much to be a multi-distribution company. And we are already strong in many parts of distribution. We would like to rebalance that more towards own distribution, though. And own distribution also includes direct, of course. And I can tell you, I'm not going to give numbers today, we'll a later day, but I can tell you our direct distribution is bigger than all of you would anticipate. I'll tell you that much. And own distribution is critical to our future. That doesn't mean we won't do bank assurance deals. We did, because I want multi-distribution. So in Poland recently, for example, we did a bank assurance deal because the majority of our distribution there was tied. And my view is a very simple one. You don't want to be strategically vulnerable by only having one distribution channel in the country. Because if you are, and the a regulator or a government changes a rule, you get wiped out. It's too risky. So multi-distribution, but more towards tied. And around Europe, actually, we do have a lot of tied distribution. You've got a lot in France. I mean, Affair is effectively a tied distribution model as well. You have a lot in Poland. I mean, we do have a lot of tied distribution as well, but we need to balance it up in some other countries. So that's probably on that question. Platform business, I'll hand over to David. Just an introductory comment. Investment business, you need scale to make work. It's about building for the future. Our offering in the platform business is very much to the broker market at the moment. And we, again, I don't really want to pre-announce stuff on analyst calls, but we will be taking a similar consumer, direct-to-consumer model from what I think is actually turning into a market-leading platform in terms of brokers. It's a colour view strategy.
Yeah, so Andy, you know, the platform, as you know, has been operating from a fairly small base over the last couple of years, but, you know, sales have doubled in the first quarter over what they were last year, total SIP and collectors business. As you can imagine, you know, we're not making much profit from that at the moment, but obviously we expect that to be a good long-term opportunity for us, and clearly the budget changes kind of play into that. Interestingly, as you know, Mark says, we get it's an IFA platform at the moment. It's highly respected in the marketplace, hence why it's doing so well. But we don't have a DTC offering at the moment, and that's very much in our strategy. And I think the final point I would say is that, you know, out of all the funds that are on there, we're only writing about 15% of those funds are Aviva investors, and we think there's a significant opportunity to increase the proportion of those funds, and that's something that you and I are both working on. So we think there's you're quite optimistic about improving that profitability over the next few years.
I mean, frankly, you'd expect a normal mix of that business to be double that level, which then helps Aviva investors too. So as you can see, packaging's important. Okay,
thank you very much.
And we will now take our next question from Greg Patterson from KBW. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Three questions. One is first quarter. I wonder what you could if you could tell us what the liquidity premium you used was in the VNB calculation and what it would have been under the old basis. Second question, what would be the cost to the VIF if the cap was reduced from 75 to 50? You know, there's a review in 2017 by the government. The government wants to reduce the cap, so I wonder if you could quantify the effect. And thirdly, in terms of your drawdown proposition, I was under the impression that you're going to launch some kind of longevity insurance there. I wonder if it would be in the form of a sort of VA rider, like a guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit, or it would be in the form of, say, a non-profit deferred annuity?
Okay. So, in answer to the question of liquidity, no, we're not disclosing that. Second question, John?
That was 75 basis points. Yes, there would have a VIF impact, but we're not disclosing what that impact would be at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, most of our new stuff is sold at that level anyway, at 50 bps, to be clear. So I don't think it's probably the focus, but we haven't disclosed that yet, if that eventually comes in. But just to be clear, so there's no misunderstanding, everything's all the new stuff sold at 50 bps anyway. Okay, so... At 50 bps, we can make it work.
You're not answering the first two. The third one, the longevity swap, would it be a VA-type rider or a deferred annuity?
The third one, we've got a whole lot of stuff lined up, but I'm, I, you know, frankly, I don't want to announce that through an analyst call, because we've got some feeling excited about happening, and I don't want to do it to you guys first. And as we announce it, we'll give you all the details and what we think we can do with it and stuff, but I don't want to announce it on the call. It's a bit like, I know a few of you are saying we want to see Ewan and understand the strategy, but I don't want to pre-announce Ewan's strategy, and he has only been here a few months as well. And at the analyst day, I can promise you guys that we will provide much more detail. I'm setting Ewan up now, of course, and David for his products, so we'll provide you much more detail, but I'm not going to do it on the Q1 call.
Alright. Yeah. Enjoy. See, no comments. It shows I'm right, asking the right type of questions. So.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, thank you. Listen.
Thanks.
And we will now take our next question from Chris Roberts from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys, thanks for taking my questions. I have a couple on the GI business. If we step back from this quarter's results a little bit and we look at what's been happening for the last few years, is this a business that's really going to grow? And if so, which countries are going to be driving that? Most of us model out to kind of 2018, and it just seems like there's negative pressure on premiums. And at what point will that start to turn around? And secondly, if we look at the UK motor business, I think you made your strategy for this part of the cycle quite clear, but could you go into a bit of detail on what your telematics offering is and whether you feel like it's more sophisticated or less than some of your other listed peers? And, you know, if telematics does really take off in the next couple of years, are you going to be ahead or behind as a starting point? Thanks, guys.
All of them are questions, aren't they? Look, there has been negative pressure. I never look at the market as one market, and I always split it up. I mean, if you have a look at our results, for example, you've seen pressure on rates and things here in the UK. Actually, in the other businesses, you've seen growth by 5%. I think it's dangerous to look at them as one, because we've actually seen some growth. I think there's a few things that we need to do better. One is packaging the products. Historically, we've just haven't packaged the products. As we get more into a digital world, packaging the products makes a big difference, and we're seeing some quite interesting trends in cross-sell that are helpful as well. So that's helpful. I think there's still going to be pressure on rates in the UK for a while, frankly. Some of our other markets, less so. And the packaging's important. Now, what that does mean in a group like ours, we can move capital around as we've been doing. So we're saying to some markets on GI, particularly some of the ones in Europe and Asia and others, saying, well, actually, we want you to grow because the margins are X, and we can grow relatively simply. In some parts of the UK market, we've done that as well. But other parts, like personal motor, we're saying, look, the rates are too soft. We're just not going to chase the rates down. It just doesn't make sense. We're not going to make a negative economic margin. So my answer to that first question is very much mixed. Depends on the geography you're talking about. But your point's well made in some of the markets. In terms of where we do have an advantage, and again, we'll show you this in more detail, we do have an advantage in terms of our predictive analytics. That's clearly worked. We can prove that with data. We're bringing that more to the UK now than it's ever been, and particularly on fraud prevention and underwriting. We just launched a major new system, a whole new system for our commercial business, in fact, in the last 10 days, called Guidewire. That's been a massive expenditure and a whole lot of work. Reduces our costs in that business, makes our underwriting quicker and better. So there's a lot of stuff happening in there, but I'm very conscious that there's no point me telling you it needs to come through in the results. And on that point, I'm going to hand right over to Morris to talk about that and the telematics.
Sure. Yeah, and thanks, Mark. And a couple of points, Chris. I think if you look at our general insurance business, we're actually gaining market share in most of the countries we operate in. So in the Canadian market, we've been growing between sort of 5% and 6.5% the last 3 years. I think if you look at our peer group in the first quarter, you know, our growth is just over 5% in local currency is actually positive versus our peers. We had decent growth in France and other European operations. So if you come back to the UK, actually that's also broadly in line with our peers that are responsible in terms of managing their profit. I think if I look forward, we've got some unique advantages in the UK. You know, we have an incredible multi-distribution platform. We have the strongest partners in the market. You know, as Mark alluded to, We're bringing, we already were good at predictive analytics. We're strengthening that from our Canadian business. We're investing in the latest technologies such as Guidewire that just went live. And we're also very quickly expanding our digital footprint to actually get true leverage out of the composite. So I actually think the growth story for our general insurance business is something that we feel quite good about looking forward. If you think about telematics, we've had a long-standing partnership with one of the global leaders, that being Progressive. We were an innovator here in the UK, originally with the albeit rather clunky black box systems. We now use something called My Aviva Drive app. We've got hundreds of thousands of installations of that. We've just signed a deal in the Canadian market. I still think that that's probably the future. It hasn't taken off in many jurisdictions around the world, but I would suffice to say we're poised if and when it does.
Yeah.
And could you say anything about the take-up of telematics, let's say, for the under 25 drivers or anything like that? Numbers you could put behind that?
Why don't we take that as something we'll bring forth at the analyst day? Happy to break it down by the various segments. And
The other thing I should say, for the first time ever in our history, a few months ago, we launched in the UK a single view of the customer. So we now look at the customer across all of our businesses and all of our products. Now, believe it or not, I know that sounds very simple, but we've never done that before. I can tell you the take-up rate of that has exceeded our business case in the first few months. So the cross-sell that we've only just started has been pretty helpful. The take-up rate, I can tell you the cross-sell rate, won't give you the actual numbers, but I'll tell you the percentage is 300% up what it was before. Just to give you a sense of the early stages, it appears to have a far better business case than we had anticipated.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Pleasure. Thanks.
And we will now take a follow-up question from Andy Hughes from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. It's a follow-up on UKGI again, I'm afraid. It's about the kind of answer to the previous question where I asked about the outlook for the UKGI. I'm just trying to think if, obviously you mentioned that some areas, including large commercial, can grow. Obviously, a couple of years ago when David Hall joined the group, I wrote a note saying, Aviva is going to grow its large commercial business. It's going to achieve a 95% combined ratio, as he said in the trade press. He's recently left the group. But what's really changed, and can you outline why the previous large commercial growth didn't really work? And I guess what I'm trying to do really is get a view as to where we're going to be in terms of GI revenue at the end of the year, because it kind of feels like the 7% decline we've seen year on year, albeit largely happening in Q1, may spill over into Q2, and then we may see some sort of recovery towards the end of the year. But overall, we could end up with a sort of 7% decline for the year in net written premiums. Does that sound unrealistic?
Thanks for the follow-up. The several questions which I'll take. There seems to be a lot of folks in the UK today. Last time I looked, we weren't a UK group, which I think was one of our UK-based group, just to be clear. And I think that shows through in the results and the growth rates you've seen across the overall group. Particularly, I'll talk first on the CSR. And the results in CSR, we haven't disclosed that separately. I can say the results in the CSR are quite good. That wasn't why I left it. When you leave and you change the group and you change what you want, some people fit and some people don't. I'll say that much. But that shouldn't be a reflection on the results, because the results in that area actually are quite acceptable. I think your characterization of what will happen in the UK results in terms of GI are probably right. I think you'll see it. You won't see a lot of growth in the first half, and I think you'll see that pick up in the second half. That's our plan, and we're working towards that with our packaging and starting to see some results out of that, but I think that would be a pretty good characterization, what you said. CSR, we are playing. CSR is a big name for what it is, frankly. I'll call it sort of corporate, large commercial / corporate business rather than CSR, and those results are actually going quite well. It is an area we've grown, and it's results that the area with the results are actually a bit ahead of plan for what we thought it would be. Does that, I think, answer them?
Thank you very much. Roughly how big is the CSR in the UK?
It's about £600 million, give or take. We can get you the exact figures later, but it's about £600 million, give or take.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, and we will now take a follow-up question from Andrew Crean from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Good morning again. It's a slightly pedantic question, but the operating cash generation at 0.4 billion, obviously the rounding to a billion can hide a lot of sins. It could mean that operation cash generation was down 22%, or it could be up 28%, depending on the roundings. Could you actually give us a bit more detail as to what was operating cash generation? Was it up or down, or materially either way?
Andrew, I definitely will give you more detail, but it'll be at the half year. But what I can say is, you can look at the underlying numbers, and actually I haven't given you expenses either. But as I've said, we've made more progress there. We are confident of our cash flow plans. I'll tell you that much. I'll just leave it at that. I mean, obviously in OCG, I think the only thing that, there's some areas, frankly, where we're ahead of where we thought would be on OCG. The only negative really in OCG at the moment is the Canadian weather, frankly. And if you can predict that, I should talk to you later, because I'll get you to reinsure some for me. But the Canadian weather is the only negative impact on OCG we have, and there's a number of upsides. I'll tell you that much, if that helps you and gives you a bit of comfort.
Thank you.
I think that is... Operator?
There are currently no further questions over the audio.
Okay, thanks everyone. Thank you for joining us. I guess I'll repeat my previous comments. Despite the turmoil politically and regulations and weather, I think this has been one of our quarters with the fewest surprises on results, which is, I think, somewhat refreshing. So on that note, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen.